recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. And it's that time of the week we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
We are fantastic today. How are you guys?
We are doing wonderful. And, Corey, we'll get to the Titans here in just a few minutes, but I do want to get your thoughts on the Nashville Predators. They've won five in a row, seven out of their last eight, and they find themselves, as we sit here today, back into a playoff spot. Number one, how surprised are you that they've been able to do this, and do you think this is sustainable for the Predators as they move forward here?
Well, I'm stunned. And I frankly don't think it would have happened without the injuries that they've had, because you bring in some hungry players, and this is what happens. I mean, you see the guys doing all the little stuff, you know, the working on the boards, the sacrificing in front of the net, the protecting the goaltenders, and the goalies are playing great. And, you know, I don't know if it's energized, embarrassed, or what some of the veterans, but some of them have stepped up their game now along the way. And I do think it's sustainable to the aspect of holding that fourth playoff spot, because the teams that are underneath them are not playing great hockey.
Yep.
And so if they can continue to play close to this level, they have to play, you know, they have to win five in a row. But if they can continue to play this style and continue to consistently put up points, because haven't they won like seven out of eight as well?
Yeah.
I mean, and again, they have to win seven out of eight, but just consistently put up points. They should be in good shape, because the other teams seem to be taking on water fast.
So if you were David Poile, would you?
Oh, I wouldn't change my goal of unloading some dead weight. I think it's been nice, because you've seen some of the guys in your system can help you, and you can lower your cap, and you can look to retool. Because you can't pay guys, you know, $8-9 million a year and not get anything from them consistently. And again, that consistency is the key. You've got to know what you're going to get. And with some of the guys on this hockey team, day to day, week to week, they don't know what they're going to get. And if they do know, it's not enough.
And Corey, to that point, I mean, we've talked about a lot this year in the fan base at one point, very critical of John Hines and the way that this team was playing. How much credit do you think John Hines deserves for the turnaround that we've seen as well?
Well, you know, I have said that I've had a hard time judging John Hines, because he inherited this mess of trying to fix it. And it wasn't necessarily, in my opinion, fixing a system. It was a culture of, you know, just not doing the stuff that you've got to do. We talked about the effort and the desire just did not seem to be there. And, you know, does he get credit for it? Do the kids get credit for it? I don't know. I think he's been a steady force. I think his message has unwavered. I'm not an expert on offensive systems or defensive systems, but I know this, they're not giving up a lot of goals right now.
Yeah.
So I like that, and he's the head coach, and so, you know, when they're struggling, people want to fire him, and when they're winning, they deserve some of the credit.
I'm recruiting people to join me on Team Rondale. Would you like to join me, Corey, on Team Rondale Moore for the Titans?
Rondale Moore?
Or are you a questioner of Rondale?
I'm a questioner of everyone. Okay.
That's right.
There aren't many guys that I don't question. You know what I'm a fan of? Best player available. That's what I'm a fan of.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, so let's dive into that a little bit, because we've had some fans text us over the last couple of weeks asking, okay, does best player available actually mean best player available, or does it mean best player available at the position that you need the most? Because that is an interesting, I think, distinction that general managers have to make at times.
I think, for the most part, just best player available. Because we've seen too many times where great players get passed on because someone drafts for need. And, you know, look, you're always looking to make your team better. And, you know, you may have, let's look for just a guy who's a good player. You know, you may have Harold Landry on the edge, and he's a good player. And you've got Bud Dupree, and he's a good player. But if you think there's an elite level pass rusher there at 22, you've got to take him. I mean, he makes your team better if you think he's an elite level player. You know, same goes at wide receiver. At tight end, if there's an elite level guard, you can make your team better. And if it's, you know, overstepping, and look, I don't think this is going to happen, but say it's, you know, a guard who can replace Roger Saffold, well, now you're in a position to save your team $9 million against the cap. But I know that's harsh and that's cruel and whatever, but that's how this is done, okay, with good young players who help you against the cap. And you don't help yourself by passing on players who are better. I always go back to the draft and said how many teams passed on Aaron Rodgers because they had a quarterback, or another draft when how many teams passed on Adrian Peterson because they had a running back, okay? The guy's the best player on the board. Chances are he's going to be better than somebody on your team, or that he's at least going to be able to get on the team field to help your player. And you're going to have that guy for 5 years, you know, not for one or two. And so, you know, yes, there are exceptions to the rule. But I think also with where the Titans are at, position-wise, I think the best player on the board is in a spot to help them virtually everywhere, whether it be corner, whether it be linebacker, whether it be defensive line, whether it be offensive line, whether it be wide receiver. Pretty much the only place would be running back. And, you know, you just invested a third there and you've got Derrick Henry. That would be tough to justify a running back at number 22. But you could be looking at your cap situation next year and saying, we don't know what we're going to get from Derrick Henry. He's had a lot of carries. You could justify it that way. I don't think that that's a great justification, but you could do it.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because I hear what you're saying with all that, but I feel like you still have to have need in mind along with your BPA, best player available mindset, because the Titans could have Najee Harris ranked as the best player clearly on their board overall.
Or a quarterback.
Yeah, right, and sit there at 22, and then I would say don't do it. But to your point,
I get that.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, to your point, I mean, they're going to have – maybe it is, because I've kind of gone to the mindset of, okay, is it a receiver or is it a corner there? But if there's an edge that they absolutely love,
yeah.
And have ranked higher than any of the corners receivers, go with the edge, right?
Yeah, because you can get a corner or a receiver in round two. You have two picks in round three. You got three more swings at it in the top 100. Three more. And, you know, I think the one thing we've seen over the last couple of years is there's a lot of good players. I mean, A.J. Brown was a second-round pick. That one turned out pretty darn well. Kevin Byard was a third-round pick. That one has turned out pretty darn well. You know, I mean, you could argue that those picks have been better than the Titans' first-rounders. So there are good players, you know, all over the board. I can't tell you right now, you know, which positions are the greatest position of depth in this year's draft. I'm not smart enough to be able to tell you that. I just know this, that you do a mock draft and you do it 10 times, and each time probably you're going to be excited about the three, four players that you got.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And, Corey, I'm going to throw a hypothetical your way. You can pick one of these if you're a Titans fan. You can have all-pro level Kevin Byard back next year or Taylor Lewan at a Pro Bowl level coming back from injury. Which one do you choose? Which one's more important to you?
I think a tackle, a left tackle in particular, is always going to be more important because you've got to be able to protect your quarterback. So I think that's kind of a loaded question. You have to look at what their numbers are, how many years left, what their age is, because Taylor is now over 30 and coming off of an ACL. Now, he's still a freakish athlete, in my opinion. But, you know, those are some of the things that you have to weigh. You know, how many years left do you think Taylor has with your football team versus how many years left do you think Kevin has with your football team? But as a whole, left tackle is always going to be valued way more than safety.
What the heck happened to Sister Jean, Corey?
You know, I was stunned. You know, the Missouri Valley I thought was headed to the Elite Eight. I don't know what's going on in the Pac-12, but there must be something in the water because the Pac-12 got Alabama as well. I don't know. I don't. It's all about getting hot at the right time. And the Pac-12 is a league, evidently, is getting hot at the right time. I think the Ramblers ran out to a quick lead in that one, and I felt really, really good about it.
I didn't think Oregon State was going to score 20 points in that game after the first 8 minutes.
I think, you know, Sister Jean just got cocky. You know, I'm 102. I've been doing this forever. We're good. And she put the rosaries down, and it all went to hell.
Something in the water or... As a tribute to Bill Walton, Pac-12's biggest fan, something in the brownies.
Could be.
Something,
yeah,
right?
I was going to say, where are you going with this?
Lava lamps.
That's right. Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex. Corey, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right, you guys have yourself a great week. Thanks.
You as well, my friend. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Corey had to say there and take your thoughts on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, streaming live on YouTube, on Periscope, and on Twitch as well. Joe Rexrode, friend of the camera today. No hat for me, so it's a little bit brighter in the studio today. A bit of a glare.
I don't look a lot at the live stream because I've been told I have bad posture, which I'm trying to work on.
Okay.
But I did look, and it wasn't like shiny, but it's like a little bit of a glow on the dome.
Who told you had bad posture?
Well, I've been putting Mitch Light on blast throughout this show already, so for changing my Rondale Moore photo. Mitch is one of the people who told me.
Well, I mean, somebody the other day compared
you. My wife tells me that a lot.
Somebody the other day compared you to the Lotso Bear from Toy Story 3. So, I mean, it's just kind of all over the map with you.
Thanks for reminding me. On the live stream. Thanks for reminding me of that. I was trying to forget that. But, yes.
It's not a bad thing.
Lotso Bear. No, it's not a bad thing
He's
at all.
He's a lovable character, kind
of. I'm sure that's just a comment on being loving.
And, yes.
Yeah, actually, yeah, Lotso Bear was actually an evil killer,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
But a large, furry, evil killer.
But I am looking at the live stream right now, and there is almost a heavenly glow around the top of my head.
Yeah.
Male pattern baldness at the age of 28 is a fun time. Gotta love it.
Hey, man, you gotta cut down clean.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean... Male pattern baldness, it might mean just your choice to
it's
have
not,
a nice. Well, I'm just saying
it could. I guess it could.
It could.
Yeah. I mean, technically, I could still grow it out. It looks awful when I do that, but I could.
Yeah. So it there's still some.
There's still some there.
Like middle skull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about all it is. Just middle and back. Nothing in the front.
Low maintenance, man.
That's
know?
Right. Absolutely. What did you think of that idea that Corey Curtis threw out there that best player available is generally the way to go no matter what? Because we've had people talk about that on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. When it comes to the Titans, should you truly go best player available or do you go best player with your needs in mind as well. Because I do hear what Corey's saying. Like, I think when you think back to, like, in the Aaron Rodgers draft, it's a perfect example. Probably could have used a guy like Aaron Rodgers, but people felt like they had a quarterback. So they just passed on him. They drafted their needs at the time. And now all of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. Like, that can come back and burn you. But what you also don't want to do, I think, if you're the Titans, like, and I think the example you brought up is a great one. Like, if Najee Harris is their best player available on the board at 22, you're not taking Najee Harris with Derrick Henry as your running back. It's not going to happen.
I wouldn't think so. It reminds me of when they picked Derrick Henry, though, after they had just traded for DeMarco Murray, and it was like, what? You have so many needs, and you're going there? Like, a lot of people had that reaction. But, yeah, I would say not. I would say not at this point. You've got Derrick Henry under contract for the next 3 years. Look, if the Titans were best player available in 2017, do you think that they had Corey Davis as the fifth best overall player in the draft?
Probably not.
That was clearly a need pick, right?
I would hope so.
Clearly. I mean, their needs that year were corner and receiver, and they picked a corner and receiver in the first round. You know, so I do think that I think you need to try to go by your board. And again, I think the great example is the edge rusher in this draft. It's not as pressing because you signed Bud Dupree. But if you have someone who you think is here overall big board versus any of the receivers or corners available, then you go there.
I would agree.
I mean, last year?
Yeah.
You know, they went – I mean, look, at the time – I got to go back and read, like, all the stuff of the instant reaction to the
post-draft reaction to Isaiah Wilson.
It was all quite favorable.
Yeah.
Was that – I mean, I didn't look at that as the most pressing need.
Yeah.
Right? That was – I mean, I thought that they were going to draft an edge last year.
I did too.
So that was a – I think some combination of best available with need, right?
Sure. I mean, you just lost Conklin. And I think you're right to the point where it kind of felt like Clowney was in the plans the whole time. And that to me, and I remember the conversation, like you had the draft. And I want to say after that, shortly after that, Jarrell Casey is traded. Maybe it was like
no,
right
he
before
was already
that.
Gone.
He was already gone. So you got Casey being traded. You don't select an edge rusher in the first round. I remember us coming back the next day, and like we were talking about, yeah, it's going to be Clowney. Clowney's going to be here at some point. Now, we thought it would be like soon and not in September, but that was the talking point around that it felt like Clowney was the next shoe to drop.
Yeah, my question for John Robinson after the draft was about Clowney because it was so hot, you know, obvious, and it ended up getting there. But that was surprising that they didn't draft an edge at all.
Yeah. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caleb texts in, I agree, you draft the best player in a position of need at 22. Trade for Anthony Miller? I'd like to see the Titans take a tight end in the third round, depending on who is there. So we've gotten a lot of conversation about trading for Anthony Miller as of late from the Chicago Bears.
Are the Bears desperately shopping him around or
that
something?
That were rumored to be shopping him around, yes.
Yeah, okay. I like him. Why are the Bears so motivated to get rid of him, though?
I don't know.
They just want to suck. They want the worst possible offense you can
have.
Well,
you've got Dandy Dalton in there now, and he doesn't need Anthony Miller to be good.
That's right.
He can bring
matter.
In anybody.
You can put anybody out there. And
they've got Allen Robinson back in there, which I'm sure he's thrilled about. Just whatever you want to do.
QB1.
Yes.
Wasn't that the Bears' tweet? QB1.
QB1. Yes.
Andy Dalton. Oh.
Yeah.
Let's
those replies were great.
I was going to say, let's see how ratioed one tweet can get.
Yes. QB1.
Yeah, Bears.
Andy Dalton, baby.
But, yeah, sure. Trade what, though? Trade what for Anthony Miller?
That's the thing. Like, when it comes to trades, I know a lot of people want to trade up or go trade for a wide receiver on another team. Like, what assets are you giving up at this point to do that? Like, the more I look at this draft and the more important I think it is to hit on multiple picks – I just don't really see any way the Titans are trading up. Unless somebody just like J.C. Horn, they just love, and they feel like the team at 18 is going to take it. Then maybe you trade up at that point.
Yeah.
But that's the only scenario I could see. Like, I think it's becoming more and more likely that they trade back and get more picks.
Well, and just in general, there's a lot of that, like trade for this guy, trade for that guy. Again, think about the economics. Think about what the Titans have had to do this offseason in shedding some really good players because they had to. So you don't want someone whose clock has already started on their second deal. You know, you want people who you can start the clock on the rookie deal
exactly.
on your team.
Yeah.
So although I like Anthony Miller, you have to draft well. You have to have confidence in drafting well. It's a gamble to think any player that you draft is going to come right in and help you, but you have to have that mindset. And financially, you have to have more picks, more rookies on rookie deals than moving picks to trade for veterans who then put you in the same bind in a year or two.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon text in. Clowney was definitely in the plans, and then Joe spit-shined his shoes to convince him to go to the Titans.
Huh?
Wow. Just polishing up Clowney's shoes, I guess.
Oh, okay. I spit-shined Clowney's shoes.
Yeah.
I thought she was talking
not
about
not your
my
shoes.
Like, what did I put
your
them on?
Your shoes look great. You don't need to spit-shine them or polish them or anything like that. They look fine to begin with.
But were they clown shoes?
Could be.
Oh, yeah, well, hey, listen, mate, I wonder if Sean Payton, and, along with the gourmet meal they made for him, did they also, you know?
Maybe so.
Spit shine his shoes, clean his fine china. By the way, my shoes, look at these right here.
Yeah, they're great.
But look at that. See the size?
Nice hole in them.
Yeah. Both sides of these shoes, and these are only like 4 months old, and they have holes in the sides of them.
There you go. Ryan Porth, how would you go about answering this question? If you're the Titans and you're John Robinson, and you've got the best player available discussion that some people buy into, and you've got the drafting for need that others buy into, with this specific draft, with this specific team, how do you go about handling that if you're John Robinson and the Titans?
I would take the top three or four needs that you have, so corner, receiver, maybe you throw tight end in there, maybe you throw edge rush in there, and you take those top needs and the best player available within those needs, I think you go with. I don't think
so. You're not reaching for a running back.
No.
Or an inside linebacker right
Look,
now.
Look, I think Najee Harris is going to be an incredible running back in the NFL, but I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice for the 2021 team and maybe even 2022 if you go running back in the first round.
Yeah.
What if, like, I think those two positions in particular, quarterback, running back, I think you have to look at them differently. Take them out, right? But what if, let's say, like, Christian Barmore, you know, who I think could be really good as a D tackle in this league, as a defensive lineman. What if he's just number one on your board, you know? And it's just like, man, I mean, you just signed Autry. You've got Simmons. Do you make that pick if he's clearly the best player on your board?
I mean, if that is one of the needs that John Robinson and Mike Vrabel pinpoint before the draft as a position that they want to get out of the draft, then sure. And if he's by far your number one player, I mean, I think you have to approach it that way and not just go into the 22nd overall pick and say, let's get the best corner or the best receiver. As we've seen over the years, that hasn't really worked out very well for John Robinson.
It is not. And that's what you got to guard against. And I keep going back to what Teron Davenport said as well, and that is you can't overdraft just because you've got a player. Like, so if you really need a receiver in the second round and everybody that you feel good about as a second round grade is gone, but you feel like you've got to get a receiver now before the third round run on receivers begin, like you can't just take a receiver then just to have a receiver. Like that's how you get into trouble as the general manager in drafting, when you're drafting people way too high.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, when runs happen on positions, at least some of those GMs are doing that, right?
Reactionary, yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, though, you mentioned Port, like, why they're getting in trouble. I mean, I don't have, like, full knowledge of, right, like, how they had guys ranked, you know? Like, we don't know. Maybe
I think it's pretty safe to assume like Corey Davis was not fifth.
I would think so. I would think so.
I would hope so.
I would hope. I think so. Yeah. But that was the most need draft. But another thing that I thought of in that draft, this is the most instant need for help, even though they're a defending champion in my opinion, I think it's clear that this is the most need for instant impact from a draft that they've had since 2017.
I agree. Which scares me, because then that might lead to John Robinson wanting a draft for need and not BPA within a host of needs that they have.
Yep. But the good news on that is, and especially at receiver, but at corner to a fair extent too, is that you do have depth in the draft at those positions. So, you know, you have, like, the draft is set up for you to still get good players at those positions. Got to make the right choices, but, you know, their positions of need are deep. Now, it's also deep at tackle, and that's an interesting question. I'll say one thing on I know we got to go. I did not draft an inside linebacker, which may have been a mistake. But I wonder if that's something that they need to do. Because the thing is, yes, they have Jayon Brown back. They have Long as a pretty good three. But how do they feel about Rashawn Evans? That's another thing that all those, you know, how do they feel about certain veterans is going to factor into some of these picks too.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll switch gears. The NCAA tournament underway again this weekend. The Elite Eight matchup starting tonight in the tourney. How do we rank the teams that are left? Joe Rexroad will do that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's time to save some cash fast with Nashville's best deals. Go to thegamenashville.com right now to get half off a $20 gift card from Grain and Berry in Hillsboro Village. Grain and Berry is Nashville's superfood cafe where healthy meets delicious. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Ryan Porther with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, going back to our discussion to begin the last segment, Buck and Gator on YouTube says, just keep rocking the bald look, Robbie. You're our own Professor X. I appreciate a good X-Men reference every now and then.
Nice. From
Charles Xavier.
Of my generation might say you're a young Kojak.
Yeah, maybe so.
So okay. Nate asks about, would it be considered a mullet if you grew out like the long hair in the back and kept it shaved up top?
Yeah.
That's a fantastic mullet.
I think the better question would be, would I be able to grow out the hair in the back? No.
Really?
I mean, to a degree, I can. I don't know if I could get it to complete mullet level. Maybe. I don't know.
I think you might
Maybe I ought to give it a shot.
You might be selling yourself short.
Maybe.
And I don't know who that dude on Baylor is. Elijah's in the studio. Maybe he knows. He knows, like, the names of every college basketball player on
in the country.
Roster.
Yes.
What's the name of the – do you know? The name of the Baylor dude with the perm mullet.
That's Matthew Mayer.
Oh, yes.
Of course.
Of course he
of
does.
Of course.
Okay.
Well, Matthew Mayer is my new favorite college basketball player. I mean, I haven't seen a perm mullet since, like, 1987 in Climax, Michigan.
It's good. What a place.
In Climax, Michigan, the perm mullet was massively popular in the late 80s.
What about in Hell, Michigan?
Yes.
I've never been to Hell, Michigan. It exists. I've never been to Bad Axe either. However, I've spent a lot of time in Climax, Michigan, and the perm mullet once ruled the day.
Yes.
It was a few years after the rat tail, and then the perm mullet really took off.
Did you ever have a rat tail, Joe?
My army dad was not having any sort of long hair situation, so no, I did not. I did actually ask. I did, like, a bunch of kids on my Little League team had rat tails. And I wanted a rat tail, and my parents were like, nah, man, you're not getting a rat tail.
What was the name of the Little League team, the Climax Rat Tails?
Well, it was actually a Little League team in Saudi Arabia. So we lived in Saudi Arabia at the time. We were on the Orioles. I was on the Orioles.
All right.
All right, then.
Coach Shackelford. Shout out Coach Shackelford. Love you, man.
Jason in Clarksville on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, that haircut would be a skullet, not a mullet.
Oh, skullet. Yes, yeah. A skullet.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, there's like a website, I think, with all the different types of mullet names. That's a great one, the skullet. I think you can call, what is it, Matthew Mayer? Isn't that also like a light rock?
That's John Mayer.
Oh, okay. is he John Mayer's like young,
this is more
mulleted
proof,
cousin?
More proof that Rexroad has not listened to a single song since 1999.
I try not to. Yeah, John Mayer.
Yeah, cousins.
He should have a mullet, too.
That's right. Joe, the Elite Eight is set. More great action in the NCAA tournament this weekend. As you look at the matchups, and we laid them out earlier in the show, Gonzaga taking on USC in the Elite Eight, Baylor and Arkansas, Oregon State and Houston, and then Michigan and UCLA. If you had to rank the eight teams remaining here in the tournament, where would you go? Is Gonzaga clearly one?
On the men's side, I'm ranking, Gonzaga is clearly the one. Baylor is, to me, clearly the two. And I probably Michigan is the three left in this thing. You know, the Isaiah Livers absence, and he's gone, has not hurt them.
No. I think we're finding out Juwan Howard can coach a little bit.
Oh, no doubt. No, Juwan Howard's been really good from the start there. And it's good because the whole idea that, like, an NBA player who hasn't been, like, a GA for 11 years can't be a college coach, that narrative needed to be busted, and he is doing that. I mean, it's not one size fits all. So he's been very good. Yeah, I mean, I think they're the third best team left in this thing. And then it gets really interesting. Like, UCLA is playing extremely well. Oregon State's playing out of their mind. Yep. I would put USC above both of those teams. If we're going to do the Pac-12 after dark rankings, I think USC is legit squad that maybe gives Gonzaga a game. But Houston is also – Houston and Arkansas are both really good. Like, I might go Arkansas next, then Houston, then USC. Right now, Oregon State and UCLA are going to be at the bottom of this thing. Although I know, Wayne Tinkle, who has clearly demonstrated his superiority over Rick Barnes.
It's Phil Jackson.
Per Jared. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, get out of Wayne Tinkle's way, man. But hey, he's done a heck of a job. You got to give the guy credit. It's been an incredible run. That team, again, I watched that team play, and I think back to what I thought the day Tennessee got smoked by them, and I'm like, yeah, I might have been a little hard on the Vols. I mean, these guys are awfully good. Best games ahead would be another interesting one. And to this I go, the women's tournament tonight has a national championship caliber game, Baylor-UConn. That's the Riverwalk regional final to get to the Final Four. I mean, those teams, both of them are good enough to win the whole thing. Baylor-Michigan might have been the best game of the whole weekend on Saturday. Also, Tuesday night, Jared's beloved Louisville Cardinals against Stanford is a Final Four caliber women's game, so that's the late game. And the women's tournament is reasonable for us with 8 p.m. as the second game tip.
Yes.
So there's kind of a staggering. I don't know that I love all these games going against each other. The men's and women's tournament, the Final Four will be different days. But, man, there's still a lot of unbelievable hoops the next two nights.
At C Northside 85 on Periscope says, did we underestimate how good the Pac-12 is, or are they just getting lucky?
Well, look, NCAA tournaments, crazy stuff happens. And I always argue against making sweeping judgments about conferences based on the NCAA tournament.
Like, everybody is now convinced that the Big Ten sucks.
Right. I'm telling you, Illinois could have won this tournament. Okay? Illinois could have won this tournament. Ohio State could have been a Final Four team. They're that good. Is the Pac-12 better than we thought? It's hard to argue otherwise. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the Oregon State thing is they're just – that's the example of, like, a team that's just on a crazy run.
They seem to me to be the hot team. Like, USC, I feel like, is actually really, really good.
Well, and I tell you what. I mean, UCLA has some players.
Yeah.
Everybody around here knew about Johnny Juzang. He was, one of those intriguing young talents at Kentucky and transfers out of there. He's very good. But Jaquez, is he just a sophomore? I mean, that guy has got to be the biggest revelation, other than A. Smith from Oral Roberts. Jaime Jaquez, he's a sophomore. He's got to be the biggest revelation of a player in this tournament. He's absolutely just incredible. 6'6", 220, does everything. I mean, he tried to draw that three foul yesterday, and then he throws up a line drive and hits it. Yeah. That's lucky. But he is a load. So, like, UCLA, also, they have got – this is not 11-seed talent from UCLA. It's not 7-seed talent from USC. Oregon State is probably the overachieving. You can call them lucky if you want, or you could say that Wayne Tinkle is you know, James Naismith reincarnated, yeah, as Jared believes. But regardless, that's probably the team that's just really playing above its head.
I'm looking forward to this Gonzaga-USC matchup. I know Gonzaga has just been wiping the floor with people as of late, and they very well could be the best college basketball team that we've seen in a long time. I mean, they look really, really good. But I think Gonzaga-USC could be a game. I really do.
Dan Wolkins said this Gonzaga team is not close. He said not close. In fact, I want to get Elijah's reaction to this. You listen to me, Elijah? Pay attention, Elijah. He said, Wolkins said, this Gonzaga team is not close to the 18 Villanova team. Your thoughts?
Not close.
Not close.
Really?
I would say not close is pretty laughable, because there's a lot of metrics that can show this is one of the greatest two-point shooting basketball teams to play college basketball. That Villanova team, one of the greatest three-point shooting teams. I think if they played, it would be a fantastic game. I think it's fair to say that 2018 Villanova team could be better, but to say that it's not close is a little laughable.
A little bit laughable, Wolken.
I'm surprised that there's a laughable take by Dan Wolken.
He ripped on me on Twitter because I was complaining about Mississippi State, yeah, getting in instead of Belmont, which, yeah, I will continue to complain about. He's like, then, they just put it in your face. Well, yeah, well, Belmont would have won every game by 20, whatever.
That's right. When we come back, we will switch gears and get back into the Nashville Predators. And speaking of the Preds, make sure you're listening for your cue to call for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Dallas Stars tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. When we come back, we'll get into the Preds and their turnaround as of late. How much credit does John Hines and his staff deserve for this turnaround? We'll talk about it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Taken behind the net by Kirby Dock for Chicago. And his pass intercepted by Johansson, giving it to Tolvanen. Back now for Josi, the score! Tic-tac-toe! Predators retake the lead, 3-2, and a goal by the captain, Roman Josi. And that will do it. Predators win again. So the Predators sweep the series against the Chicago Blackhawks this weekend, and they have tied them for the fourth spot in the Central Division standings.
Two huge games, and obviously tonight wasn't the prettiest game, but we found a way to win, and that's the most important part. And I think with everything we've been through the whole year, to be in close to a playoff spot right now, same points with Chicago, it's huge for us, and it definitely gives us a lot of energy going forward here. All I do is
the Predators sweep the Blackhawks over the weekend, 3-1 on Saturday night, 3-2 last night, and they win twice in United Center. And don't look now, the Nashville Predators back in a playoff spot. They have won 5 games in a row. They've won 7 out of their last 8. And after the game last night, 18-17-1 on the season, 37 points. They now hold the 4th spot in the Central Division, tied with Chicago for the amount of points. And if the season ended today, my favorite phrase in sports, the Predators would be in the playoffs. It's pretty amazing the turnaround that we've seen with John Hines and company over the course of the last couple of weeks. 7 out of the last 8 found their way back into a playoff spot.
If the season ended today, is your favorite
I hate it.
Phrase in sports?
I hate it.
You hate it more than culture?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah? I don't. Culture.
Culture. Yes.
Something in a Petri dish. What's the Preds' record since Roman Josi swore, since he used a naughty word?
He didn't use it. He almost did. But it's got to be pretty good.
Wait a minute. It slipped out, didn't it?
Nah, we'll see. I have to go back and check the tape. But it's got to be pretty good.
Give me a ruling, Porth.
I mean, they won 7 out of the last 8. Now, he was hurt before that.
Well, I will say.
Yeah, it's been a while, I guess.
I will say a turning point in this season was
go score 5 goals.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since then, they've played really good hockey.
So Kara Hammer deserves more credit for this entire thing than she's getting.
Yes.
Go score 5 goals.
Thank you, Joey. And you know what? He's played a lot better since then, too.
He's almost scored 5 goals since then.
Yeah. A really good play by him in the first goal on Saturday night. Entering the zone, scores, finishes it off. I thought he was good again last night. Lots of things changing with this group.
They look like a pretty good hockey team
They look like a pretty good hockey team right now. With that in mind, let's revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. The Preds have won 5 in a row. They've won 7 out of their last 8, and they currently sit in a playoff spot. Are you a believer in this turnaround? 293 votes are in. 54% say yes. 46% say no. So pretty close to right down the middle, Joe Rexrode.
Okay. I think that's – I figured it would be more than 50. Probably pretty close. And it's sort of – there's some wiggle room there. You know, you can believe in the turnaround. You can believe what you're seeing and say, hey, these guys have figured some things out. They're playing to the identity they talked about before the season. They're getting great goaltending. Some of the young players have really come in and taken advantage. And you can still believe that the Preds should be selling.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's that two things being true, you know, like it doesn't always have to be either or. But you got to like what you're seeing from this team if you're watching it.
You do. The official Ryan Ellis Stan account on Twitter, which is great, says 4 of the 5 wins were versus Chicago and Detroit. It's not convincing enough. I'll need to see more winning. Good news is you got more games against Dallas and Chicago and Detroit coming up.
Well, and again, like Chicago's been one of the pleasant surprises this year, have they not?
They have. They are falling apart.
They are.
As we speak. But
and also, I mean, Detroit, for as bad as Detroit is, that's been a constant problem.
Well, they just whipped Columbus twice over the weekend.
I mean, beating bad teams or similar teams, because I still think Chicago in overall quality is right there with Nashville, that is important. Also, 2 of the wins were against, one against Tampa Bay, one against Florida, which even gave you a chance for these last games to matter at all.
Right.
So you do have to, and I know, a game here, a game there, what does it mean? But the fact is, 2 of those wins were against the top teams.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Jeremy K. Gover, who wants to weigh in on the Preds turning around. Gover, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Gover time.
Gover, hey, boys, how's it going? Listen, normally I would text this in, but I'm driving, and I don't want to text and drive.
We appreciate that.
Right? but it's another turning point of the season, I think. I haven't done the research on this. It just occurred to me as you were talking about it. But was when Adam Vingan released that article in The Athletic, that interview with Pecorine,
yep.
Pecorine basically said he didn't want to be traded, even though they were struggling and probably going nowhere. And he didn't say that, I'm paraphrasing, but when he came out and said, I don't want to be traded, I want to end my career as a Nashville Predator, if you go back and look at their record since then, I'm pretty sure guys have been playing all out since that point. Now, obviously I can't prove that that's a reason why, but we've always called Pecorine a leader in that locker room, even though he can't wear the C. And so I do think there might be something to that.
Hmm. Hey, that's a good point, Gover. We appreciate the call, brother. Gover brings that up, and Jim Diamond brought this up last night on Twitter when I was tweeting about my sarcastic tweet about them now becoming Stanley Cup favorites. Right. Jim Diamond's response to it was, the players don't want to see Ekholm get traded. Like, they don't want to see Ekholm go. And they have played their butts off since then.
Win for Ekki.
Yeah.
KeepEkki.com.
Their butts off since then to keep him a part of the fold.
Well, I would not have thought of the Pecorine piece. That's an interesting thought. It's also interesting that, like, basically he's barely played, you know,
yeah,
during the stretch because Saros has been so good. Maybe that changes now. Saros day to day. I don't know how many days that means, but maybe there's more Pecorine to come. But that's an interesting thought. Also on the Vingan front, I'm going to start writing about this hockey team, Vingan, and not just trades, buddy.
He did the other day.
Actually, he's got
both.
I haven't read his mailbag today, but he's got a mailbag today.
Well, it's interesting, and I threw this question out before the break, and I'll ask it to you. We talked a lot about John Hines and the fan base this time 3 weeks ago, a month ago. A lot of it very negative towards John Hines and the job that he was doing and the future of this team with him at the helm. I think if you were that way, you've at least got to give him some credit for turning this thing around with the young players. How much credit does John Hines deserve for what we've seen over the last 2.5, 3 weeks?
Like, do you think John Hines started reading some books on hockey to finally figure out something about the game of hockey?
Maybe
huh?
so.
He's
Maybe
figured so. A few things out. It's 5 guys on the ice at a time, John.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. I rejected them when they were at their depths. So I would like to rate it is a little bit of a victory lap. Like the pointing at the coaching, sometimes it's right, but a lot of times it's exaggerated and I just think wrong-headed. And I think it was here. And he does deserve credit. Now, where would he be on the coaching greatness Wayne Tinkle scale per Stillman? I don't know. Is he like 70% of Wayne Tinkle?
I don't know. Like I think he deserves credit. Now, is he or the system or anything like that the number one reason this is turned around? No. The number one reason this is turned around as of late is because they're not allowing any goals. That's the number one reason this thing is turned around. It's because they're basically giving up one goal a game.
But is that not, and again, this last weekend, goaltending was a little bit less of the saving their butt thing this weekend. Is that not some credit to the system and for the system actually working and how they want to play and how they need to play?
I think it is, yeah.
And if we rip on coaches and I think a lot of times correctly identify coaches whose voices get old, yeah, things like that, does this not mean that his voice must be resonating somewhere in that room?
Well, I think it does. And I think that's been obvious. Like, to me, it's clear to tell when a voice is, or a coach's voice gets old. I think the team just stops playing. Like, they just stop playing with the effort. I don't think, as bad as they've been at times this year, I don't know that effort has ever been a problem. I've never once watched them play this year and been like, you know what? They're just phoning it in. They don't care.
They
like,
quit.
They've always been working. And quite frankly, like there were times last year before the coaching change was made where I'm not sure that was the case. I think there were some effort problems last year, and I think you heard them address that. I don't feel like even when they weren't playing well and when it looked really bad at times this year, I don't think that effort was ever a problem.
No, not at all. No. That's overrated too. There's another word, sports word you like. You know, you like to – you like, if the season ended today, you like culture. I love quit.
Yeah.
Oh, they quit. This guy quit. That team quit. Yeah. You quit. Quit in this sport and see what happens to you on the boards.
You'll get hurt.
So I agree with you, though. Effort has been good. Execution has been bad. But they've – and some of this is – it's just confidence, and you get rolling one way or the other. The snowball can pick up in either direction, and I didn't think this team had one of these in it left.
I didn't either. But here they are, back in a playoff spot, and a good schedule coming up this week as well. We'll talk more about the Predators when we come back. Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase and the Nashville Predators pre- and post-game shows on the Predators Radio Network, will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save